Ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday. D's back. We are ready to go.
Bonjour.
Gosh, man. You're back in America. Show some respect.
Bonjour.
Okay, so obviously we're going to get another recap from D's amazing trip to Paris. We're going to find out what he did the last 24 hours there and also why, you know, I would even say a little bit of advice when it comes to industry events, no matter what industry you're in.
Correct.
Next up, Bill Gates has a couple big regrets and he's telling us what they are.
Wow, I wonder what they are.
I don't know. Whole new shopping strategy that could overhaul the skateboard industry. We're going to tell you about it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the topic of fairness to different races in this country. Some of our presidential candidates talking about reparations. And in particular, the housing finance area and how some people really got the short end of the stick and how we could maybe make it right.
Mm-hmm.
There's a city in this country that has chosen to ban e-cigarettes.
What genius city is it?
But I'll tell you what, there's a big catch that's really funny about this new law. Also, Toys R Us is back from the dead. We are going to meet the man who brought Fila back.
Wow.
Union.
Big Union.
Big Union knows what's up. Next up, we're going to talk about a little bit of Trump stuff. We're going to talk about Iran. We're going to talk about...
Iran.
Is it Iran?
Iran.
Technically? Yeah. Listen, it's Iran. Okay, we're going to talk about Iran, and we're going to talk about Trump's big ICE takeover this weekend that got canceled.
Okay.
Last but not least, if you're interested in guns... If you're interested in the Second Amendment, we got some good news for you.
All American news.
This is news for your just for America.
Yeah.
For a tech savvy America.
I like it.
Okay, guys, that's it. Group chat time. Hit us up on Instagram at Group Chat Pod. Make sure you do us one big favor.
What?
If you like the pod, if you get anything from it, even if we just make you chuckle a little bit, post it on your Instagram. Post it on your social media. Let everyone know. That's how we spread the word. Okay, D.
Is Lil Nas X gay? That is the big question.
D has a big question. That we don't talk about that in this whole episode. He just brought it up randomly. But
I just saw it on Twitter. I just want to confirm.
Okay. Confirm or deny. If anyone knows, send us a message.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. Group chat.
Cash.
Ladies and gentlemen, group chat.
Cash.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday, it's group chat, D's back.
We're all here.
D's back, we're all here. We took the straw man D down.
Oh yeah, that was good. Everyone said I looked skinny, I did like it.
You did, you looked actually flat. You kind of contoured with the couch. Look, we did okay. You know, the episode was good.
Yeah.
We're glad to have you back.
Thank you.
There's something about the three of us.
In the same room.
Yeah, it's what the magic is here. So
it is.
You know, we were hoping we had the biggest downloads ever in history. We were a little short.
Really?
Yeah, just barely. I said we weren't, but we were. So hopefully today's our biggest day, and everyone's happy to have you back.
Woo!
How was it? We got a little bit of a recap on the phone, but how was your final 24 hours?
Yeah, so I think there are a couple of things I forgot to mention that were super interesting. I went to, our friend Lindsay invited me to their party for Christian Louboutin.
Yep.
And they threw a circus. I mean, just over the top, incredible.
And you guys got shoes for free.
You guys, meaning me, yes.
I thought Brian told you too.
I mean, Brian's not an influencer.
But he said we got shoes in LA, and you got to choose if you want to bring them to Paris. Is that true?
I didn't see Brian with any pairs of shoes. I am not commenting that he got anything.
Okay.
He does not deserve it.
Okay, so all that matters is... You got free shoes.
Yes.
You took them to Paris.
And I wore them.
You wore them to the event.
But the shoes were given in LA.
Yes.
That's literally like you wearing your Revolve to Revolve Festival.
Yes.
You're just one of the girls.
Yeah.
got it.
I'm happy to be an influencer girl. I'm an influencer chick.
That's good. So that was good. It was. It looked like a mini, like, neon carnival, kind
of. It was. It was like they had a lot of games. They had food and drinks. Well, the really interesting thing about France, last year I didn't expect it, but this year when I went back, because we were there exactly the same time last year, tequila has just not hit the rest of the world.
Really?
It is really frustrating.
What do they drink?
Vodka, wine, and I don't drink vodka, and I don't mind wine, like, for dinner, but, like, at the club, or you just out at parties.
Like, at the club, you can't get 42?
So, at the club, they had 42, like, the actual nightclub. I only went to a nightclub one night, but, like, everywhere else, it was just, like, just not available.
Yeah. So, what'd you do?
I drink whiskey.
Jesus.
Well, he was drinking Jack and Coke the last time
Jack rocks.
Who even are you, man?
I mean, that's there's nothing else. When you go to Asia, that's what you drink.
That's not West Hollywood bubble. That's not. No.
I mean, I just don't want to drink rosé at night. It just, like, puts me to sleep.
Okay. All
right. And then I went to Bobby's. I don't know if I mentioned Bobby Hundreds had his book signing.
Yep.
In Paris, for his book that he just released called "This Is Not a T-Shirt." I went to that, which was cool. A lot of LA people there.
If it's not a T-shirt, what is it?
You got to read the book.
It's a brand on it.
Okay.
That's the whole point.
Got it.
You can go. He just invited us Tuesday. Yeah.
The Grove.
The Grove, Barnes & Noble. He's doing a little thing hosted by Wale.
Oh, Wale. I didn't see that.
I also want to point out, I think Bobby Hundreds has a podcast now.
I think it's coming.
And I just want to point out, he openly tweeted, and we rebutted him about a year ago.
I think he said, why does
no, it? No, I will not be starting a podcast.
Yeah. I think it was a little, like, mocking.
Yep, he caved.
You have to cave.
You got to cave.
Everyone
Obama's got a podcast.
We all got podcasts. I have 7. Anyway, congrats to Bobby for that.
Yeah.
And Tuesday at the Grove, he's got a
What's funny is his book came out the same time as Virgil's book. So Virgil's book is 1, his is 2 on the charts right now.
That's like when you choose when to put out your album. You got to make sure it's not
I mean, like, Virgil drops a surprise book.
That's like Drake's album.
Was it a surprise book? It wasn't anticipated?
No. I mean, it was anticipated like 2 weeks ago. I didn't know it was coming out.
Well, either way, congrats to him. Book's a big deal.
And then, what else happened?
ASAP.
Oh,
we
Friday.
We haven't talked to you yet.
Yeah, Friday evening, I went to a show by a French brand called Casablanca.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, think Hermes, you know, those types of prints and patterns, but all men's. Like, this is exactly the type of look I want when I'm older. I just want to wear these silk shirts and just prance around, white pants, great sandals, and just be rich.
Okay.
And that show was outside, super sexy. Like, what's so funny is Serge Ibaka was standing across from me, right? Sitting across from me.
In a skirt?
I saw you posting that.
Yeah, and everyone was asking me, is that guy a basketball player? Nobody knew who he was. He just won the NBA championship.
Yeah.
Literally nobody knew who he was.
He got roasted online for wearing a skirt.
He wore a skirt?
He had a skirt on. Cam Newton, one of those fashion men's skirts.
Cam Newton was out there dressing crazy, too.
Yeah, man.
Did you see that viral video that went Cam Newton?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
on the plane? It looked like he was flying coach back from France.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Offered $1,500 to just get the extra legroom seat?
So I think what happened was, I'm assuming he had a business class seat booked for another time.
And he just had to come back.
Probably had to come back home, because I looked several times throughout the week about moving flight times. There was not a seat. I mean, you couldn't even find a coach seat available.
Right.
I mean, the seats were so full at all these airlines.
That's a rough flight for Cam Newton.
And he's a big dude.
He's 6'5".
And he's a big hat.
Big dude with a big hat.
Yeah.
But yeah, man. Anyway. Okay. So what else? Let me ask you this. Because you posted a podcast about it, right? A Detour.
Yeah.
What was the main takeaway? Like, a lot of our listeners have fashion brands or want to.
Yeah.
What was the main takeaway from the whole week? Like, do we have to go next year?
I mean, here's what it is. I think you have to go to whatever the equivalent, because the whole purpose of the podcast, I said why you should go to Paris. But the whole idea is whatever you do for a living, you need to go to your industry's moments. And two reasons. One, you meet all the people you want to meet in a different setting. Yeah. When you're in Paris at, like, Rude's fashion show and you run into, like, a buyer, their guards are down.
Yeah.
They're drinking rosé or champagne. You're talking to them, having a conversation. Completely different vibe.
Yeah.
Versus when you meet them in an office setting or you meet them in a traditional trade show. Essentially, Paris has taken over magic and agenda.
Mm-hmm.
People are just there. Mm-hmm. Not even if they're not even showing, not doing brands, and everyone is just there hanging out. And I think, one, you get to hang out and meet with everyone in your industry. Two, you really, like, I'm not a person that gets, like, inspired or excited, rarely.
Just in life.
And, yeah, I'm just like, but those types of things, like, I don't watch something and get, like, oh, my God, I'm so inspired.
Yeah.
But, like, just watching, like, how important LA is to fashion was really exciting.
Yeah.
I got to watch so many fashion shows. And like watching like this Casablanca show and then Ruigi's show for Rude, it was inspiring. Like you actually get like excited about like, oh my God, these brands are really, really the future. And then, you know, the H-Wood guys threw their Bootsy Bellas party with A$AP Rocky. That thing was just insane. A$AP's like on this day on the roof of the club performing. It was epic. And so you just kind of get to like hang out with like all the people in your industry in a very, very different setting. So that's why I think you should go. Then you also see what also is on trend. I'll tell you, if you did not have Louis Vuitton sneakers on and Louis Vuitton sunglasses, you were not in like on
trend. That's just Virgil though.
It's all Virgil. It's Virgil mania. Yeah. So I was going from one restaurant where I had a meeting to meet up with some friends for a party, and I got stuck in some traffic, and there's literally middle of Honoré. Honoré is like the street in Paris where all the stores are. 500 kids standing outside. It's like a crazy thing. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? I lower the window to look, kind of look out the Uber, and I see all these LA kids. So then I go on everyone's Instagram. It's like Virgil and the homies all like playing music, and the kids are just like mosh pitting and dancing in the middle of the street. Virgil was everywhere. I went to a fashion show for this brand called Murder Bravado. He was there. I walked down the street. He was there. He's just everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't even understand how he physically gets everywhere to every event, to everything.
What kind of security does he have?
Nothing. He's just walking with his like homies.
Interesting.
No one's fighting at Fashion Week.
No, or Robin. I mean,
he's just getting
mobbed.
Of course
people are getting robbed.
At Fashion Week?
There's gypsies everywhere.
Fashion Week?
I mean, not where he's
not
hanging
in that
out.
Crowd.
When me and Amanda were walking last year, during like the area where all the nice stores, there was someone trying to pickpocket Amanda, and a shopkeeper came and like shoot off the kids.
Jeez. I just feel like Fashion Week is so many people like there for, you know, like it drowns out all the riffraff. Whatever. He probably should have security.
He really should, because like it's so easy to go up to him because he's just everywhere.
Right. Yeah. Next year I'll have security.
Anyone can go up.
Just one guy.
I'll tell you, one
guy in a black suit.
The cool thing about Fashion Week, and I'm sure it's like this for other industries, if you're into this world or want to meet these people and you're there and you get in, it's pretty easy to weasel into all the events and parties.
You could talk him into
like,
it.
Like, I was with people that were not on the list that were just like, yeah, and just like walked in.
They just assume if you've made it to Paris, you belong.
You have
here.
To wear sunglasses and Louis Vuitton sneakers. That's the key.
Got it. Okay.
Everyone should invest in those Louis Vuitton
sneakers. Yeah, if you want to sneak in events, that's
yeah, you
that's
look cool. Key. You just look like you belong. You just kind of like, yeah.
That's it.
I mean, I was plenty of people were there.
What about the Saturday protests? Is that still going on?
I think they're on hiatus for the summer.
So you're able to get around freely?
Saturday, I was fine. Okay. Saturday was actually the least traffic day.
Interesting. So protests are done.
The biggest thing about...
they take a break for Fashion Week.
Yeah, Fashion Week, you know, they want to attend.
All the gypsies and the protests, they're like, hey, listen. They got Louis Vuitton sneakers, come on in.
I also think that was a city, dangerous as hell, but without scooters, I could not have done anything.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yep. I literally couldn't go anywhere. And sorry, John, I said literally.
Oh, yeah, John.
You said it again.
Yeah.
Literally.
I can't believe he listens.
Shout out to John Aljum. Yeah. Welcome to the Cathys.
Our number one fan.
Cathy Aljum.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got to get on to some news.
Yeah.
Do we cover it? That's it. So if you're in fashion, go to Fashion Week, go to the events, whatever industry you're in, go to the events.
Yeah, and it's not about attending like the trade. So in this case, cool. If you can get into the fashion shows, awesome. But if you're just at the right restaurants, the right bars, the right parties, it's the equivalent to meeting everybody.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to be on the it list for everything.
Okay.
People are just around.
There it is. You heard it here first, guy.
Yeah.
Okay, news time. Bill Gates seems like a man that hasn't made many mistakes. However, he says he has one or two that were his greatest mistakes of all time.
Yeah.
Curious what those are.
So he did a talk with a venture firm called Village Global that he is an investor in. And one of his biggest regrets is the concept of work-life balance, and that in his 20s and most of his 30s, he really didn't do anything besides work. And then he feels today his 20-year-old self would be disgusted with his current self, that he didn't take advantage of enjoying his weekends, spending time with his girlfriend and vacations. And interesting, because who would have thought that would he have become Bill Gates?
Yeah.
That's my
biggest question.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. So I think in hindsight, he feels like he probably missed out on a big portion of his youth.
Yeah.
But luckily, he's the richest man on earth, so...
Make up for it.
Yeah, that's the reason why I have a hard time, like, fully... Like, I do think there's some, like, wisdom there, but I have a hard time fully taking that, because there is a chance that that lack of focus... To me, it is more a product of his focus is what led him to work so hard.
Yeah.
If he would have had that lack of focus, if he would have spent more time doing those other things, would he have missed some of the biggest opportunities that even made him as rich as he is? And then therefore it wouldn't have been a regret. I mean, I just feel like it's easy to be the richest man in the world and say, I wish I had more time like chilling.
Yeah.
But I get it.
But there's a whole thing right now that's going on specifically within technology, that the concept of hustle porn versus like work-life balance, and there's like these two different camps. Some camps think that you need to work 24 hours a day and brag about it.
Yeah.
And then there's another camp that says like, why are you like,
don't ever work hard.
Or like, no, stop bragging about how hard you work. Just do what you need to do and stop posting how hard you work. I wake up at 4 a.m. I do this, I do that. Like,
but now there's a group that doesn't even work that hard and still porns it.
And they brag about not working hard.
No. We got so many groups, because now we have that group.
Yeah.
And then there's also the group that isn't working like the lazy group, but posts like the hardworking group.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because that now has become a whole thing.
Grind time.
But I do think I fall on the side of the, like, I think you should have some sort of well-rounded, I think the like working 24/7 thing is stupid. And I think posting about it and telling people they should do it is
I think posting about it's stupid, but if you are built like that and you're able to do it and you're able to do it successfully, good for you.
Yep.
If you're not, don't do it.
Yeah, I just think the like advice of like you just have to work sleepless nights and not sleep and that's how you become successful, I think is false.
Yeah, and I think the 4 a.m. wake up challenges are really detrimental to people.
I think that they are one of the dumbest things that is currently
and it's
happening.
Like, 100% it's the dumbest thing.
Yeah.
It's making...
Because the other problem is we see these people crash.
Yeah, it's unsustainable.
Well,
yeah.
if you go to sleep at 8 p.m., it's 100% sustainable.
Yes, but my point is nobody does that.
Who's doing that?
Everyone does a challenge.
I'd love to.
You see all these people now, and I don't want to talk negatively about these people, because at the end of the day, they are trying to do the right thing, which in a sea of a lot of bad shit, good for them. But you see like where everyone was doing that 75 hard challenge and all these different challenges. Now you're like people are sort of falling off of it, or it's fading away, or in some cases you see the sort of others. You see it recoiling, you see whatever. It's just those things aren't built to actually have a better, more productive, healthier life long term. It's built to like shock you, have something cool to post about for a month, and then you relapse and you didn't gain anything.
Yeah, because the problem is the goal of the challenges is to post about it.
Yeah.
Not to actually build any sustainable life-changing decisions.
It's all about posting.
And it's like, I made it 75 days and then what happened?
Let's talk about day 99.
Yeah.
Well, that's 14 days after the challenge. 24 days after the challenge.
He's saying on day 99, you're literally back to where you were 10 days before you even started the
damn
thing.
You need like a 4,000 day challenge.
You need no more challenges.
No more challenges. Challenges are bad.
Group chat is against all challenges.
I'm not for challenges. I think you make subtle changes to your life towards improvement.
Yep.
And that's actually sustainable.
Yeah, no challenge. Okay, so anyway, so what's the other regret?
The other regret, which is really interesting, is that he said that Bill Gates thought Microsoft should have been creating the operating system, what Android is today, for non-Apple mobile products.
Uh-huh.
And that Google kind of like stole, you know, took that business. And that's huge for Google now, yeah. the Android business. And Microsoft easily could have done that. And what's crazy is there's a book that Bill Gates put out, I don't know, probably 20 some odd years ago about the future of software and the internet.
Uh-huh.
And when you read it, he, and I remember reading this, this is like late 90s maybe, he literally said, sorry, John, I said it again.
This is the literally challenge.
The literally challenge.
Yeah. It used to be the feet wiggling. Let's bring that challenge.
Yeah. Let's do the literally challenge.
What? Screw it.
He said that mobile was going to change the world.
Yep.
Like, that's really what's the future of the internet, future of technology, future of software. So I'm really surprised with him at the helm that he didn't get. So that was his biggest like business regret in thinking
but
about it.
But you know what's funny is that's actually kind of a shot at Microsoft management because Android was released well after Bill Gates was CEO of Microsoft.
Yeah.
So he's, the way I
he
read it.
He was still
it,
chairman though.
But he should have.
Chairman, but when you're not CEO, you're not driving those decisions.
But if he knew, he should have said, this is what we need to do.
But he's saying, he's blaming himself, saying it's my regret.
Yeah, but sure it's his regret, but being chairman versus actually being in day-to-day, you're not going to have that like laser focused.
Had for sure.
Bill Gates been CEO, maybe they would have come up with Android before before Google did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I said differently, maybe it's right. It was like, I should have stayed a CEO for another 10 years and dominated.
Maybe it would have been double the size than we are. We're the biggest company in the world. Maybe we should have been 2x that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, everyone's got regrets.
Totally forgot about the Paris thing that I wanted to actually talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So I got an email on Saturday afternoon from a Kathy. Not a normal Kathy.
I saw you post that.
So our friend Anish, who's also a Kathy, who happens to be the North American CEO of LVMH, had turned on his a colleague at LVMH, Ian Rogers, to the podcast. And Ian enjoyed it. I'd never met him. Sent me an email saying, hey, I heard you in Paris. I was listening to the podcast. Here's like a list of restaurants and museums. Like he has his killer Paris list, which I'm definitely going to share with friends, whoever are going. And so I was like, oh, I'm around this evening if you want. Maybe we can catch up. So he's like, I'm having an early dinner. I was at dinner. So I was like, let's meet up. Went over to his house and ended up hanging out at his house for 3 hours, drinking a vintage Chinese wine, which was incredible.
Did you bring any back?
I mean, how can I hand carry wine?
You just checked seven bags.
I know. I only brought one back.
There's two other group chatters here that didn't get any wine.
But it was incredible. And are you allowed to check in alcohol from another country? Is that legal? I know you can just do
you
it.
You have to stash it.
I mean,
I don't think you can.
I don't think you're allowed
claim
to.
It.
Can you bring alcohol back from?
Why? Because you think you have to go to a duty free shop or what?
Yeah,
I think you do.
I don't know.
So you're trying to set me up?
The same, man. You could have tried.
We're kind of enjoying the other set with only two seats.
You know what? Get the pillow back.
So anyways, I go to his house. Super interesting guy. Was in the music business. Ran Beats Music, which became Apple Music. Was an early person. He was involved in a startup called Winamp back in the day, which, I mean, we all used growing up.
That was the gold standard for MP3s.
Yeah.
That's how you played MP3s, Winamp.
So I like literally grew up. He knows our friend Angelo, was a music manager also. He managed two of my friends that I used to go to the studio with all the time. And fast forward, he ends up at LVMH. He's the chief digital officer for the last 3.5 years. He's from Indiana. Skate kid. Moves to LA. Gets into more technology, stuff like that, and ends up in Paris now. And he's out there working with LVMH, and we just ended up sitting in his balcony, I think till like 1 or 2 in the morning. I had a flight at 7.
How romantic.
Yeah, it was super interesting.
A couple of guys in Paris.
This is what you dream about in Paris.
Yeah.
Just it was a couple really dudes on a balcony talking about the fashion business.
Just everything. You just even like rap, white rappers from the valley. But it was even crazier because he really enjoys the podcast and feels like it's his connection to LA and what's going on in America. And then he was telling me what other podcasts he enjoys. It's always interesting to know. He likes one of the ones on The Verge, The Daily, and Kara Swisher and Scott Galloway's podcast from Recode.
Okay. Right.
So those are like and he loves Group Chat, which was awesome because I was just telling him, I'm like, think about how hard it is to get someone like that's attention.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very, very hard thing to cut through. Sure. And the fact that like he enjoys it and he's like, and he was being honest, he's like, if I didn't get something from the pod, I wouldn't listen to it.
Yeah. Course.
Well, he's giving you expensive Chinese wine, so he's clearly so enjoying the pod.
Yeah. He actually had Casamigos.
There you go. But
you drank the Chinese wine.
Well, because he was like,
put the tariffs on. Yeah.
Okay, we got to move on. Is he the one who told you about this next topic?
Yes.
Okay, so there's this article in Business of Fashion that is, so Farfetch is an online marketplace where buyers and sellers find each other. Mm-hmm. There's this article about could that potentially be a model that could work for the skateboard industry.
Yeah.
So I don't know the details of what this is saying. I do know that the skateboard industry is a rough industry.
Yeah.
I know that it's had a lot of trouble over the years. So I don't know. What's this article talking about?
I think the idea is it's starting in the UK is more like the higher tier skateboard industry. So not like, don't think like your neighborhood garage shop.
Mm-hmm.
Think more of those stores like Union is considered a skate shop, is it? Kind of?
Kind of.
I feel like high-end skate and streetwear is all the same now, right?
Well, no. I mean, he's talking about like Alex Olsen's brand, fucking awesome. And like, what was the brand White Boy Steve was in? Bianca Shandon.
Yep.
Like that whole world. That world of brands. Of like creating, those brands are so hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you don't live in that particular town.
Yeah.
So if you can, the reason why Farfetch work is someone in Iowa could find a store in Milan that has the Saint Laurent jacket that they want.
Yeah.
So that's why people bought into Farfetch. So this is the same concept. I think you can probably put skate and streetwear in this mix, unless streetwear just falls into Farfetch. Like, are people buying Rude on Farfetch?
I just don't think. Sure. I think that as personally, I could be wrong here, but as someone who grew up skateboarding and knowing the line of skate and streetwear, like I don't think it's built to do that. Like I think all of the brand, let me just say this, I think it's much more a factor of the mentality of the owners of the brands. So the people who know that they're trying to create the next Supreme or Palace or whatever are savvy enough to fall into the streetwear category.
Yeah.
And then they're getting bought by the same places that streetwear is being bought, right? Yeah. Whereas some of those brands, I think just
like true core skate.
Yeah, but
like so they truly don't care.
Do the cool skate kids, what do they think about Rude, Fear of God, Virgil?
I don't think they wear those brands.
Do they hate on them?
True skate kids couldn't possibly care less about those brands, but I don't think they hate on them anymore. Like I think that like that was like the old skate mentality is like everything sucks.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like that anymore. Maybe my mentality has changed because like LA kids aren't like that.
Yeah.
But no, they don't wear those brands at all. There's no like fashion. They don't try to like do fashion things. But the point is I know the creators of Fucking Awesome, for example, and like I just think it's more a product of them not wanting or not having the capabilities to go become the next Palace, less that like kids just can't get it. You know what I'm saying?
I would assume it's hard to get, right?
I think it's probably hard to get, but by nature of how they're making it, like meaning, I don't know, it's just not the goal. There's not enough of that to create a website around it.
Yeah.
There's three brands that are like that.
Yeah.
And if they got it together enough to want to go make a bunch of money, they would become in the streetwear conversation.
What about if you took it like, not just those brands, like the modern day, is it CCS?
Mm-hmm.
like, do kids shop on CCS? That was a huge business back in the day, right?
Yeah, I don't think CCS is even there anymore. But that's then a totally different conversation.
Yeah.
Because CCS is like, you're literally buying, like, wheels and bearings and, you know. And so if someone said,
like, a DC shirt.
Yeah, and I can't quite, all of those things are so similar.
Yeah.
That I can't find a reason why you would need to track down a store in some random place to get like the perfect set of wheels, because it just doesn't work like that. You can get them. So once again, I could be wrong. I'd love to hear about it. But coming from a little bit of that background, I don't see where that world is big enough that it would justify like an online marketplace. I think we're talking about like three brands, you know?
Yeah, I don't know all the brands in that space. I know that brand, but...
I think it's small, and I think the ones that want to go bigger, go bigger.
Well, if they throw Palace and Supreme on it, then it's different.
Right. Yeah, but then it's a streetwear site.
Yeah.
Right? That's why I say when it says skateboard industry. But isn't
Palace and Supreme considered skate?
Not really. I mean, like, yes, they have skate teams, and they put out skate videos, but yeah. I don't think anyone, I think everyone...
Is anyone skating anymore?
6.2 million people. That's a lot. I looked it up.
It's not insignificant. It's not a...
Well, they're all banking on, I think, I'll tell you what I also read about this whole market is everyone's banking on the Olympics adding skateboarding to, obviously.
They already did.
Yeah, so like that, I'm saying like, isn't the next Olympics the first one with it?
Yeah.
Not that,
it didn't as far happen. As I know, yeah.
Yeah,
it so, didn't happen already.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So once that happens, globally, skate should become a lot bigger because now all these 8-year-olds are going to be watching Olympics saying, that's my way into the Olympics. Skateboard.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I feel like for me, from the outside looking in, skate was, the peak was when like Lil Wayne was skateboarding and Bieber was coming to the Fantasy Factory.
Yeah.
But skate fashion is what's happening right now. It's just influencing streetwear. All those kids who are running around Paris are all ex-skaters.
Yeah, the line is just so blurry because you could argue that Virgil was an ex-skateboarder.
Yeah, and he was.
You know? So I just think that when you... Streetwear is so big now that when you boil over from skate into like a fashion company, you're now streetwear.
Yeah.
Like Supreme is a streetwear brand that came from skateboarding. Yeah. Palace, same thing, I would argue.
Yeah.
Whereas like an online like marketplace for skateboarding, I just don't think... I don't know. But I've been wrong many times before.
Yeah.
Wait, speaking of Farfetch, our close friend Melissa works there and sent me an article that they're part of the partners for the Facebook Crypto Foundation.
I saw that.
Wow.
There's a lot of the companies.
There's like all the big retailers are partners, right?
Yeah.
I think it's kind of like everyone needs to participate, otherwise this doesn't work.
Well, yeah. And it also legitimizes it because everyone's supposed to keep it honest. Cause it's
I think Alibaba is part of it too. Is
that right? Uber, Lyft, Stripe, Coinbase.
Okay, moving on. We got to keep our energy up.
Okay.
We're in the damn weeds.
All right.
And just as I said that, we're going to get into an article that is kind of a bummer.
Okay.
There's this Bloomberg article about how housing finance enriched whites at the expense of the black borrowers.
Yeah.
My question is, I mean, number one, tell me about it. And number two, why is this a white and black issue and not a like a more of a class issue?
No, so this is literally, sorry, John, an issue of, at least I'm catching myself.
It's true.
Step one. In the 60s, there was like clear racist laws put into place, not giving home loans to black communities.
Got it.
And that, when you think about how wealth has been passed down from generation, homes is a big part of it. Like we always wonder, like, how does everyone afford these homes? It's like your family passes it down to you.
Yeah.
So, I think this when you really think about, people always say there's been a racism is institutionalized, and it's caused a tremendous amount of damage to black people in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And when you really read, think about in the 60s, and you make $30,000 a year. And the exact white counterpart to you can get a home loan and you can't.
Yep.
For no reason other than your race.
Yep.
So now you effectively can't buy a home, or there's just other ways that were instilled in those eras of how, in specifically in black communities, it was pretty much high interest against the deed of your home where you were meant to fail. You couldn't keep the payments up if you had any downside in your income. And so when you think about all those types of things, and you take 50, 60 years of a generational kind of things happening in families, it's impossible to put the impact of what something like that does to an entire community.
Yep.
And that's really why when like you hear politicians recently, especially like I think Elizabeth Warren even talked about it, like reparations.
Yep.
It's not a crazy concept.
Yep.
It's just how you do it. And I was thinking about it. And I was like, all right, so there was clearly an issue on lending. And even in the subprime era, so many inner city people got affected the most because they were not properly explained how these loans worked.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all these adjustable rate loans that eventually ballooned and put them all bankrupt.
Yep.
And they were predatory loans in predominantly minority neighborhoods.
Yep.
And so it really is such a big issue. And how do you fix it, right? Because now all these generations of people have gone by. Some people who got to buy homes passed it on to their families. They pulled out equity lines. The values went up. They went and bought real estate, started businesses, and lived better lives because of it. So how do you fix that? Like, I really think like the way reparations really probably needs to be handled. It's not just writing a check and saying, here, good luck, you know, hope you spend the money right. It's maybe there needs to be special rules for certain groups of people on home lending,
yep,
and things like that. Because those are the things that give them the opportunity to set their future, children on track. And so that they're able to have the same opportunities as like their white counterpart. And yep. I think that's such, when you really read how devastating things like that are to like a community, it's pretty sad that like.
Yeah, I mean, these kinds of things have been institutionalized for decades.
Yeah.
And this lending's one aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
You watch When They See Us, the Central Park Five, just shoddy investigation, mm-hmm, of a crime because no one cares.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything starts. This is why like even when whenever we talk about race things, so much of it comes from opportunity. If you do not give a group of people an opportunity, they turn to, you end up in these situations.
Yeah, of course. And I guess my point is a lot of it really stems from just mobilizing local activists within communities, whereas everyone's focused on Trump's tweets. You really might want to make an impact, like go back to your community and actually like figure out what kind of things are going on that are predatory to certain groups. Uh-huh. And
but here's, that's unfortunately, that's great. You want to fix the problem, we need to dole out some money. And that's why like what Robert Smith did, he doled out some money and
saved
a bunch of kids from a bunch of bullshit debt. And so someone like a Robert Smith, Bill Gates, all these billionaires get together and say, okay, we're going to create a private lending solution for African Americans. They get 0% loans.
The problem is like, yeah, of course, but when you talk about private citizens, everyone has their own cause that they want to donate to, right? So Bill Gates focused on global malaria and he's like getting close to eradicating it.
Yeah.
So like you can't like how do you just fix this problem? Because if you're going to talk about a private citizen who wants to use their money to donate.
I know. That's why Elizabeth Warren's saying, I don't care. I'm going to make it a government issue and we're going to help our community and I'm going to give reparations to black people. That is literally what she's saying.
She's the only candidate that's actually listing out her plans, by the way.
And very, very crystal clear. Home, education loans, this type of stuff, environment.
Yeah, there's a big tech guy, Chamath, who is probably now a billionaire for sure after Slack, but he tweeted out like 2 weeks ago, I don't agree with a lot of what she's saying, but she's the only one that's actually telling me what she's going to do, so I'm going to donate to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because with that issue, you have to be very descriptive and exact on what you plan to do.
Yeah.
Because I don't think throwing cash out into the world is, number one, it's never going to get you elected, unfortunately, and I also don't think it's the solution. But I do agree, man. I agree that there has to be some sort of give.
Yeah.
You just can't stack so many years
against a group of people.
Against a group of people, and then like, oh, our bad. Like, no, we'll get it right next year.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you gotta, I don't think throwing cash is the way, but I do think you gotta do something. And I even hope that, I don't know, I guess I'm not too informed on it, but like, as like marijuana becomes legal and those sort of things, do they go back and clear sentences and
they
records.
They haven't said that they're going to do that, but they absolutely should.
Yeah. It's those type of things.
And
man.
Even there's another issue happening in the cannabis space where the entrepreneurs predominantly are not minorities who've been arrested by the crime.
Yeah.
So there's an opportunity there saying, okay, 50% of dispensaries have to be owned by, you know, black citizens.
Yeah, you should probably just do a ratio of what number of percentage of race that have been convicted of marijuana crimes.
And that percentage.
And then that percentage should be dispensary owners.
Like it has to be that specific to turn the tables and balance. Like there's this big thing called opportunity zones that are happening all over the country where in, you know, kind of impoverished neighborhoods, they're giving tax credits to start businesses. And all I'm reading are like white billionaires trying to figure out how to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Right?
There's a whole real estate hustle around this.
Exactly. So it's like there's a clear thing.
And they mask it that they're helping the community, but they're using the tax credits to juice the returns.
So crazy. Yeah.
Imagine also the fact that when all of this is happening and we're having these conversations, arguably a bunch of white people that feel left out and like they got screwed elected our crazy president.
Right.
Like this is nuts.
Yeah, no one's anywhere near on the same page.
If you're a billionaire right now, you just got to shut up and just either help out or don't say shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn it. Okay, we got to keep moving. San Francisco has a solution to all these pesky little e-cig smokers.
All right.
They're banning them all.
Uh-oh.
Beverly Hills banned cigarettes and tobacco. San Francisco's banning e-cigarettes.
I'm okay with it. Ban them.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I had like
an argument.
I have no
problem, but why don't they just ban normal cigarettes too?
They're not banning normal cigarettes?
Normal cigarettes are still legal.
Okay, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard then.
Yeah.
That instantly became really stupid.
It's San Francisco. What do you expect? They're not smart.
They are not smart.
I have no problem banning e-cigarettes, but ban regular cigarettes too.
That is absurd.
Because their whole premise is that e-cigarettes are targeting youth.
God, they're so stupid.
Everyone was smoking cigarettes in Paris, by the way.
No vape.
Very cool. I mean, Jewel was there, but like...
Did you pick one up?
What?
Did you pick one up? You want to be cool.
Nah, you should have smoked a cig.
I don't want
Have
a
you ever
cigarette.
Smoked a cigarette?
No.
Okay. Well, listen, that just literally went from like interesting news to the dumbest piece of news we'll probably get all week.
Yeah. And Jewel's based in San Francisco. That's a funny part.
What is?
Jewel's based in San Francisco.
Are they?
Jewel's going to start making regular old cigarettes again.
Yeah. Just bring it full
circle. If Juul did cigarettes, people would buy it instantly.
For sure. Yeah. Why not?
It's a cooler brand.
Yeah.
Like a really well-designed pack.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, thanks, San Francisco. You guys are idiots. And you lost. Next up, Toys R Us.
Yeah.
Back from the dead.
Coming back.
They're opening stores.
Yeah.
This is interesting. What do you think happened here? I mean, were they Chapter 11 bankrupt?
They were Chapter 7.
That's what I thought. So what happened?
So someone's bringing it back. A former Toys R Us executive is a CEO of a new entity called True Kids. And he's out here pitching people his new version of what Toys R Us should look like. He thinks it should be 10,000 square feet, roughly a third of the size of the brand's biggest stores. He wants to make it more about experiences of the product. I think toys should have a physical retail location. There's a massive opportunity in the toy business that if it was actually done right, that if it was truly an experience where you could bring your kid, try out 50 toys, if kids could try out toys properly in the proper environment, parents would be stuck with buying way more toys. Not when they're just on a shelf. Like you should be able to try out every single toy before purchase. Kids would be like, I want this, I want that, I want this.
Yeah.
You can't say no to your children, you'd buy more toys.
It's just scary. It's just as scary when something went that, something that was so such a regular part of our retail American life goes full bankrupt, and then you're talking about 10,000 square feet locations. It just feels scary to me. You have to do it really, really right, I feel like. And you have to have a really good e-commerce strategy to go along.
Part of the Toys R Us story is not that people just don't want toys. It's that they expanded to too many locations. Private equity companies came in, loaded up with debt, sold the real estate, made money, leased it back to the company, and just made it impossible.
They just destroyed the company. It wasn't a bad business.
Yeah, they probably didn't need that many leases. I mean, toy stores should exist in some number. I don't know what the number is.
I just don't like the word 10,000 square feet.
They used to be 30.
I know, but I think it should be 5. Let's start.
You need a lot of toys. There's a lot of
experiential. Maybe they should partner with Ryan.
They should definitely partner with Ryan.
Should be called Ryan's or Us.
Yeah. Toys are Ryan's. Yeah. Literally, they're all Ryan's toys. You can borrow them for a little bit. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it seems promising. I want it to work just because I want things like Toys R Us to exist. It's just 10,000 square feet scares me. Is there anything about their e-commerce in the presentation?
No, they said they're going to do e-commerce.
Yeah, they're definitely going to do it. But
the experiential part's good.
Yeah, I think if you had, and you don't need that many stores. You need one in every major kind of town, city. So you probably need, they used to have thousands of locations. You probably need like 100.
You want to know how to get your kid a cold real quick. Take them over to the local Toys R Us play place where everyone shares toys.
I mean, what do you think is happening at a park?
I hope they're checking for anti-vaxxers.
Yeah, it's true.
Sheesh.
They should vaccinate you while you walk into Toys R Us.
No shit. You walk into Toys R Us. Poke.
Boom. You want to have fun in life, little kid? Boom.
Yeah. The toys have needles in them. Okay. Next up, apparently, so Fila has made a bit of a comeback, mm-hmm. the athletic brand. Shout out to our boys, Eric Deluxe and DJ Five. They did a Fila collab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Faid. There's a story in Bloomberg about the man who is responsible for this resurrection. Looks like he's doing pretty well for himself.
Yeah. Yoon-Yoon.
Yoon-Yoon.
That's his name.
Nice.
Korean businessman that was an exec there. Ended up rounding up the money to buy the company.
Okay.
And kind of in the last 12 years, resurrected a dead brand. His kind of strategy was he thought it was an older brand. So he focused in on younger customers, cutting prices. Remember, I think at the end of last year, Footwear News said they were shoe of the year.
They were one of the most relevant brands, I thought, right?
And it's interesting. In America, I see it amongst high school people.
Yeah.
I definitely saw every young person in Europe wearing Fila. Like,
really?
The chunky, like dad, their chunky dad sneaker.
Sheesh.
That was on every young person's feet. And it's crazy that when you think of a brand like Fila and you think about this guy sitting in Korea that bought the business and made it like this global brand, it just shows you that there's so much opportunity in building a brand if you actually have like some common sense and pay attention. Because when I was reading this story, I was thinking like this person, he's 73 years old. A 73-year-old man brought back Fila. Yeah. 73-year-old Korean man in Korea.
Named Yoon-Yoon.
Yeah, Yoon-Yoon. His English name is Gene, though.
Seems like quite a departure. Yeah. Like, what?
He said he's known as Gene in English. So, I mean, like.
So, Yoon-Yoon translates
to
Gene.
He's like, my name's Yoon-Yoon. Call me Gene.
Jeez. Yeah, okay.
Why not?
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, I do think at the end of the day, like, we get really wrapped up in, like, the hype and the who's cool and the, yeah, like, they're the coolest person at the party. But, like, there's so much of this that is intelligence and like execution. A really smart guy can figure out how to, you know what I mean?
And then for Yoon-Yoon.
It made me think about like how many American brands have not figured anything out. J. Crew, Gap, just the list goes on and on.
Yeah, they're just structurally flawed, those companies.
Yeah, and they're not making.
They need a Yoon-Yoon.
But I think you don't see, like, Yoon-Yoon obviously figured out something where kids in Paris Fashion Week are wearing the brand and PacSun's carrying it and is one of the most relevant logos of the year. He understands how to market a brand like that, even though he's not that person.
Yeah.
J. Crew and them just closed their eyes while the whole thing went by.
Yeah, and it got me thinking about even a business like LVMH. So Bernard Arnault, the CEO, became the third richest person in the world this week.
Wow.
$100 billion he's worth.
What a way to celebrate Fashion Week.
Just being richer.
Did you see him around?
The 100 bill.
I did not see him around.
Got it.
I doubt he's anywhere where I was going to be.
Nope.
Maybe it was at the LV show. I wasn't there, but maybe he went to that. But think about how culturally relevant like a brand like Louis Vuitton is or Dior and their efforts to always stay young and relevant. And then there's so many mega massive brands that do nothing. They don't pay attention to culture.
Yeah.
They don't pay attention to...
And they're paying the price.
Yeah.
They're out of here.
And then young Yoon-Yoon...
Old Yoon-Yoon.
Old Yoon-Yoon.
OG Yoon-Yoon.
Yeah, and just came in and swooped up.
Yeah.
I like it. Smart. Good for him.
Good for Union. Yeah. I support it across the board.
Yeah, it's impressive. And because, like, Fila doesn't mean anything to, like, a 16-year-old.
No.
They don't know the heritage of Fila.
Oh, no. Well, now it does.
Yeah.
Because now it's, like, the cool new brand. That,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty dope.
It's good. I really like these sort of stories. Because I think it's good to talk about, like, Virgil. Not that Virgil's not really smart, but, like, talk about Virgil and all the hype stuff, but also, like, the other side of it that's just...
execution.
Yeah, look at this guy who did this thing. And then look at the Gap and J. Crew and all these Abercrombie and whatever that just got like left in the dust because you chose to ignore it.
Yeah.
Good job, guys. Okay, it's time to dive into Trumpville.
Woo!
First story. Trump, there was this big announcement that ICE was going to just be going on a raid, nationwide raid.
We're coming in your house.
Coming in your house across the country, no matter where you are.
Yep.
Donnie boy decided to say, you know what? We'll hold off. Hopefully we can find a better way to go about this. We're going to give you the weekend off.
2 weeks he's giving him.
Wow. So what do you think? Do you think this is PR? Do you think this is him trying to look like a good guy? Do you think maybe they weren't prepared to actually pull? I mean, we all know it's not what it looks like. So is it... maybe they didn't. The email didn't go out in time, and he needs a couple of weeks to regroup.
I mean, I have no idea what he's thinking.
No, I think he's using this as a negotiating tactic against Democrats because he wants to change the asylum law rules, how people declare asylum and who we give asylum to. Obviously, like disadvantageous to people who are trying to.
Yeah.
But millions,
it's how we treat it, like getting asylum here.
Correct.
Yeah.
So when someone shows up and says, like, I'm
political asylum.
Yeah.
Got it.
And you know, deporting millions of people is a lot, it's really hard.
Hard.
You need how many people you need?
They want to get 2,000 families.
That's it?
That's what they said. They would target 2,000 families.
I thought it was this nationwide.
Yeah, he said millions of undocumented immigrants. Yeah.
He just likes to hype. Thing.
Millions. I don't know what, I mean, we'll see.
Okay, well, we got a break for now, but man, I'm going to be honest, I can't imagine being one of those families and trying to like figure it out and make ends meet, and there's just this like
hanging
fear of like, oh my God, like our, you know, like just optically what it would look like our president is like declaring war on us this weekend.
And you know, there's so many issues right now with all the people that are still at those border camps.
Yeah.
People, there's so many outbreaks of diseases among children. Kids are dying.
Unattended to.
There's no supervision. The sanitation of those areas. It's kind of like, it's becoming a humanitarian crisis. It is a humanitarian crisis now. And I don't know enough of what's going on. Why are those people given the option to be able to go back to wherever they came from, or are they trapped there, or they're like, we'll rather wait here than go back home?
No, I think they're in limbo.
Yeah, I don't know. But so you would think that nobody would
the option to go back to Mexico.
You would think that they're not. If it's that bad, they're not just saying, we'll stick it out.
Yeah,
that's why I have to have no choice, right?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. I want to know for a fact that they are not given the option to go back home.
Any immigration attorneys, send us a note.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm curious.
We'll find out real quick. Okay, the other thing is Iran.
Yeah. Where'd you run to?
Well, I ran a half marathon. what's going on there? Are we going to war? Are we like, what?
It's scary.
So they bombed this ship. They shot down a U.S. drone. The big mess up was shooting down the U.S. drone.
Yeah.
Because now it's an unmanned drone, so.
I know, but still it's a direct, like,
it's just a confrontation.
Spat in our face. Apparently there's some disagreement over where the drone was in airspace.
Yeah.
We claim international, they claim their airspace.
And don't worry, we did a cyber attack on them also.
What would we do? Hack their Facebook?
Disabled Iranian systems that control rocket and missile launches. So we're at each other's throats.
Jeez.
I'll give Trump a little credit here because I was getting nervous when I saw these things happening that he was just going to go drop a bomb on them.
Yeah, he had a weird press conference where he kind of like...
backed off.
Yeah. And he tweeted too.
In the middle of the press conference, he started with like, you'll see. They're like, what are you going to do? You'll see.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And then he said, well, I think maybe a general just got out of line. Someone acted on their own.
You know, we don't have a defense secretary right now.
It's So maybe he's waiting on that.
Maybe we need to hire one of those.
It's Donald Trump.
But yeah. He also said, in quotes, obliteration like you've never seen before if Iran were to go to war.
Gosh, man. Can you imagine this guy really in the captain's chair with like a war situation?
Yeah, I mean, the issue is it's similar to President Bush where you have people in the administration that think they could take advantage of him and convince him of things,
yeah.
Which is how we got into the Iraq War.
Yeah.
So this is why I think we may not go to war.
Because he's just like...
He's like yeah. Listening to me like,
shut the fuck up.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. And I think that's literally... I bet you there's people in his ear telling him to go...
I think Pompeo's telling him.
Yeah. This is the way you get reelected.
For sure. Can I ask the stupid question? This is all oil-based. This is like Iran because they control the area where the oil leaves.
The Strait of Hormuz.
And so they're just flexing a little on people? Like, why are they...
Well, it's also based on Iran's... They have, like, a nuclear treaty with Iran, and they want them to disassemble all nuclear arms or any ability to have them. And so that's something that the U.S. is constantly fighting with them on.
Got it.
So that's a big issue. There's always some underlying oil issue at any given moment that we just don't even know. We'll know about later. But it's definitely... There's when it comes to the Middle East and the United States, there's some shady shit going on always.
Oh, big time. But doesn't this is a bit of a like F you to everyone from Iran, right? This isn't like just a US-Iran thing, is it? I mean, isn't it also like Europe?
No, Israel-Iran is the big issue. Yeah. So Israel obviously wants the US to take action.
Yep.
Because they're close enough neighbor. Where that they can actually inflict harm on each other.
Yeah, got it.
So that's the complication.
Because Iran's not going to attack the United States. They're going to go attack Israel.
Yeah, they'll attack Israel.
So this is all U.S. Iran.
It's scary.
Okay.
We don't need a world war right now. The economy's good.
Everything would torpedo overnight.
It would be pretty bad.
Okay. Well, guys, let's all just cross our fingers and hope for 1 second we just avoid this thing.
Yeah.
Somehow. I think we will. Okay, last but not least, I want to end us on a popular topic for the pod, influencers.
Yeah.
We talk about influencers all the time. We talk about influencer marketing. We talk about big companies that use influencers. And D, you yourself are an actual influencer.
Yes.
I wonder if you've heard of this new trend. And for that sake, I'm wondering, what would it take for you to become a gun influencer?
Nothing.
I would Second never. Amendment. I'll give you $20,000 a post and fly you to every Paris Fashion Week and Coachella for the next 5 years.
And our Basel.
All you got to do, I'll throw in our Basel. Just hold this AR-15 and say, out of my cold, dead hands in your caption.
Zero chance.
So this is a new trend. Hot girls posting photos with guns.
It's called Suns Out, Guns Out, Buns Out.
No, it's not.
Yes.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Do they hashtag that?
That was a caption by a gun influencer who she wears like a bikini thong and kind of fires up her AR-10 rifle. So gun
she shoots it? Or she actually shoots it or she holds it?
This is just a picture.
Isn't
that
what like Dan Bilzerian was doing?
Yeah, so guns have become made sexy.
Yeah, they should have got him a long time ago.
Think about how many people go to a gun range and Instagram it. It's cool.
Yeah, I've done it.
And you posted it.
I did?
Yeah. It's a cool thing to do. And I think...
What's the people's fascination with guns? Like, why'd you do it?
It is fun. It is fun.
It makes people feel powerful.
It's like, there's something about it that's similar to like boxing. It's a bit of a stress reliever. I don't know why. I know it sounds super...
I get boxing, but I also get boxing.
Because it's physical activity.
No way, you don't have to like fight another person. Like I enjoy boxing and just like hitting pads.
Yeah. That's the same thing.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know why. There's something primal in us about shooting up a piece of paper that is like a bit of a like rush, a bit of a, you leave
Were
there
you a good
feeling
shot?
Low. Huh?
Did you have a good shot?
Not extraordinarily, no.
Yeah. It's not even about that. It's just letting those boom, 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 boom.
Do you feel like you're in the streets?
Yeah, like, you feel like a man. What's funny is you go to the one, there's one in downtown LA.
LA Gun Club?
Yeah, and there's people, you know, there's guys there that are clearly from the streets and are clearly just getting some practice in. And it's like, shit, man, like it's a little, I mean, there's just guys in all blue and all red. And, whatever. It's a weird sort of slightly scary, because it's also just all these strangers with guns and they're right next to you. Yeah. And so you're like,
they can just turn to the right and shoot you.
Yes. So like you'll be shooting and there's like shells like from the guy next to you will like hit your leg or whatever.
That seems a little stressful for me.
Yeah. So it is a little stressful, but we looked it up and it seems like people don't really go nuts in
there. Well, the issue is, you know, you can't advertise guns on social media. You can't advertise cannabis. You can't advertise e-cigarettes. These are massive businesses. Yeah. They obviously want to build brands, market their product. And they're finding a loophole.
How amazing is it that all the businesses that you list are not allowed to market to customers, yet they're unstoppable.
It's every post.
Yeah.
It's also, they're unstoppable businesses. And every post is like a gun, an e-cig, or some weed.
Imagine if you could actually market them.
Yeah, Jesus. That's real. That's true product market fit.
Yeah.
That is, man. That's true. I didn't think about that. Like, think about what that'd be an interesting, like, study.
What's your study? Dude, shit.
Everyone wants to the power of like organic marketing, like non-paid.
Yeah, we get served all these damn mattress ads.
Yeah.
All people want to do is shoot guns and smoke cigarettes.
Like, here's a tea that spent like hundreds of millions of dollars and then this product that spent zero and the difference.
Yeah.
You know? Because people just love sex, guns, and pot.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, I mean, if you're trying to get your point across, I guess in the Instagram age, there's no better way than to get like a half naked chick to hold your thing and
yeah,
suns out, buns out, guns out.
It works. And America. I think it glorifies guns and it works 100%. It's great.
I'm surprised Dan Bilzerian isn't some sort of spokesperson for one of these things.
Right.
He maybe is.
Yeah. Because that's just clearly your poster child.
Yeah.
How does he get away with all that weed stuff? Because he's just posting that he's building a brand. He can't pay for the marketing.
Yeah. It's his brand.
Gosh.
It's clever.
That guy's like the hedonistic golden child.
Yeah.
He's like the Justin Bieber.
Once like prostitution becomes legal, he'll be the face of that too.
Is he still big? I don't hear about him as much.
He's big.
You don't hear about him as much, but I think he's still.
Your boy Pete's just nodding his head like, dude, this guy's.
Your boy Pete's
in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
He's like, hell yeah, he's big.
I felt like he was gonna come over.
Yeah, he's just going to smack you.
Your boy Pete had a poster of Dan Bilzerian shirt off with his gun out and a joint.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's good.
No, you talked about his numbers before and his impressions are ridiculous.
Like, he still though?
Them. It was probably like only a couple months ago and he gets like some stupid like 50 million impressions or some shit like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Listen.
It's like people
Pete's on board.
Following him, but they're going to his page to watch because people are watching.
Yeah, he gets shared. I always get shared some random Dan Bilzerian clip of him like going on a jet ski, firing his gun.
But he's
or something.
Not even putting up that like crazy stuff anymore.
Yeah.
Like beyond his normal stuff, but he still is huge.
There he is. That's America.
Yeah.
Dan Bilzerian is literally America in the form of a.
This
human.
Is America, and this is a picture of Dan Bilzerian.
It is just shooting a gun with like a girl in his lap and a joint.
Four girls.
Yeah, true. What am I thinking?
It looks America. Like 10. I just went on his Instagram page. It's like 10 to 1.
Insane. Okay.
And there's a picture of him with a gun.
I'm telling you, that's all it is. Okay. That's it, guys. We're
Happy
back.
Monday.
Happy Monday. Hope
we're
everyone
all here.
Has a great week. We're not going anywhere this week, so we'll all be here for every episode.
Yes.
Take care.
Ciao. Au revoir.
Oh, God.